Welcome to Cashflow Positive. I'm your host, Kenny Bedwell, founder of SCR Insights, one of the leading data platforms in the industry. Through using data and analytics, I've been able to replace my W-2 with cash flow from my successful short-term rentals. And my goal is to help you achieve the same freedom and success. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just a novice looking to make your mark, Cashflow Positive is your go-to resource for unlocking the full potential of your property portfolio.
Welcome everybody back to another episode of Cashflow Positive. My name is Kenny Bedwell, your host, and I have a special, unique episode today. So I always bring on a guest for the part two. I've got Ryan Bakey from Learn Like a CPA. He is the number one CPA and really, frankly, short-term rentals that I know. I know there's other ones out there, but he is the best at GOAT. It's been awesome to see him grow his business and learn a lot from him. This guy knows his stuff, but the episode is different. How is it different? So Ryan has his own podcast. Ryan, what's the name of your podcast again? Is it just
The Learn Like a CPA Show?
He keeps his names like very straightforward. I'm all over the place. So anyway, The Learn Like a CPA Show. We're going to have it's going to be more like a conversation, not an interview. And we're going to go over this whole idea of like beginner's luck and how to invest and diversify and all these great topics. But he's going to share the same exact episode on his podcast. So enjoy this one. Let's get started.
Man, I am here with the man, Kenny Bedwell from STR Insights. What's the STR Property Finder? So many good, valuable resources. Kenny and I have been friends for a very long time. We met each other when we were both still working W-2 jobs. Kenny was working for Citibank. I was working for Deloitte. And inside of that, we spawned the courage to quit our jobs. Yes. And do what we both do now, which is helping real estate investors build their wealth using real estate. And a little bit of background about me. At this point, we've helped over 500 clients in the real estate niche, probably more so within short-term rentals, learn how to save money on taxes. We've also helped people identify and acquire properties just like Kenny has, and really just help people grow their net worth and save money in taxes. Because when it comes to taxes, a lot of people they focus so much on 1 year at a time, and they don't have a long enough time horizon. When the reality of the situation is you want to save the most amount of money over the course of your life. So just buying like a vehicle or a Mercedes to 179 isn't a good long-term tax strategy play. What is buying real estate. Kenny, go ahead.
Yeah. Thanks for that, Ryan. I'm excited to have this conversation with you. I know we were talking a lot during the show. Sometimes, man, I think people would just enjoy if we just hit record and just did our conversation. I think that's what we're going to do here. One of the things I love about Ryan is we're able to have like discussions about business, you know, and it doesn't even have to be about short-term rentals, but just, you know, interactions about business and how to grow our business and work with people and employees and, you know, sales and marketing and all that good stuff. And it's always a pleasure and lots of really good nuggets and information that you can actually apply into other different types of businesses too. So excited to share and dive straight into this. So let's do it.
Yeah. Today we're talking. So we were talking earlier about, I was just in Cancun last week for my wife and I's anniversary, as well as a mastermind. So I'm in this mastermind called Driven. It's a marketing / sales mastermind. First and foremost, it's got a lot of guys and gals in there, people that have sold, you know, 8-figure businesses, people in there that have done, you know, 9 figures in revenue through their businesses. So really a lot of bright minds. And while I was there, I had the privilege to meet this guy. His name's Craig. Craig and his partner, they have this huge stock investor platform where they have tons of clients and they have a community around stock trading. They have a finance background. And one of the conversations that got brought up as I was talking to him over and over is this idea of risk. Like, what is risk? You know, what is fear of risk? Because everybody takes risk in life. Like, I was just driving yesterday. A young mom, 2 kids in the back seat. She's sitting there at the drive with the wheel with her phone in one hand, and she's fixing her makeup, the mirror with her makeup in the other hand. It's like, so what is risk? You know, that's risky. Yeah. He taught me about this topic of like, you don't want to be overly safe, but you don't also want to be overly risky either.
Right.
You want to know, like, when is the right time to play it safe and when is the right time to take a calculated risk. And we see so many investors, like, just jump in on their first or second property and they're taking a tremendous amount of risk, like 30, 40% of their net worth into one single property, mm-hmm. the first go around.
Yep.
You know, that's pretty risky.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, you have to assume an amount of risk if you want to be more intelligent or make more money than the average bear, but not that much risk to where half of your net worth is in one property. I guess, what's the most amount? Do you have a recommendation on, like, how much net worth somebody should put in one property?
So to me, it definitely varies based off of the type of investment you're going to do. Right. Like, so for example, we'll keep it in real estate. So the more riskier the investment, I think you should actually have less. And also your age, there's a couple of variables, like your age, you know, like the closer you are to retirement, you know, you don't want to take on that much risk. So you want to have less net worth into certain types of investments, like short-term rentals that are inherently higher risk, but higher reward. So the younger you are, you can take on more risk and get a little more aggressive. And in my opinion, you can put in a little more net worth than other people, but you need to be really, really careful with it. Because the problem is, I'm seeing people, whether it's due to natural disasters or just poor investment decisions, or, you know, they watched a YouTube video that the date on it was from 2021 and they're like, well, I can do that today. And they just go straight in, you know, dive in headfirst into a market that they know very little about in terms of competition, and they buy a bad property and they have nothing, they can't cover it, they can't get out of it, they can't sell it, and they can't reposition and go buy something else to cover this. They have to kind of sit and almost like pay out, shell out money just to stay alive. It's insane. I actually met somebody who did that in the Smokies, and her situation is, like, it's pretty rough. I mean, she bought bad, and because she, you know, I mean, it was just strictly because of ignorance, you know, and very sweet lady, loved the lady, super nice, tried to help her. But, like, her property has a revenue ceiling. She can't burst through that ceiling and increase revenue magically and all of a sudden, you know, be all right. She paid too much for it. She can't sell it. It doesn't even make sense as a seller financing deal. Like, she can't even literally hand it over to somebody for no down payment, and it makes sense for them. Like, nobody wants it. And she's stuck with this property that she has to pay out of pocket nonstop. And she literally has no savings or anything else to go and buy something else to help dig herself out. What does she do? She just has to sit on it until, you know, eventually it'll appreciate and someone buys it, you know, hopefully. That's scary.
It goes back to, like, what we talk about with the, you know, the pro formas, just understanding what went wrong on an investment. I won't forget this. I don't know if you remember, but when we had the first go around of the accelerator, we were Super Team Accelerator. We were teaching people how to, you know, analyze properties, how to look at the numbers.
Yeah.
More than just back of the napkin math, right? We were teaching people percentages of revenue, percentages of expenses. And we had somebody in there where I had a one-on-one call with her. And based on her numbers, I told her, I'm like, hey, you're hitting the revenue mark. You're hitting the expenses mark. It's just you bought at the wrong time. Mm-hmm. Your interest rate, you're just paying too much interest on this property. But, like, the revenue was good and the amount of money that they were paying for monthly expenses was fine. It was just their mortgage was so much. And I told that story when we had one of the boot camps in Nashville. And I'll never forget, like, the lady raised her hand. She's like, that was me who you told that to. I was like, I had no idea. Like, we love helping you guys out, but we can't remember, like, 500 faces. I mean, I would love to try to remember that many people, but I just can't.
I can.
But,
Ryan, I don't know. I'm just kidding. Yeah, no, I'm in the same boat. Yeah.
But it goes into that. A lot of those sort of mistakes can be prevented if you just take the time to learn the numbers. I mean, I used to listen to Dave Ramsey all the time. He used to always say math works in all 50 states. Mm. And I believe that to be true, maybe except California. But math works in all 50 states, right? So if you can buy a property for X price, purchase price, and you can rent it out for Y, and your expenses and everything that goes into it are Z, you too can buy a profitable rental property, right? If you can learn how to
Yeah.
How that goes. Now, here's a mistake that most investors make, and I'll let you guys in on a little secret. A lot of you are looking at what the purchase price of the property is, what the listing on Zillow is, and then trying to get the math to work to tell you that yes or no, I can buy this property, right? What you should know how to do, and what I know, Kenny already knows where I'm going with this, is you should have a buy box, a criteria of certain properties in a certain radius that you know, hey, look, a 4-bed, 2-bath in this area, it's going to net 50 grand a year. And then you'd have that net income of what you know that those properties in the area can be. And then you could back into what you should pay for it. This is how commercial real estate's traded. You know, commercial real estate's traded off net income and a cap rate. Okay. It's the same way how we all should be looking at these properties. 99% of people that buy Airbnbs, they're looking at the Zillow listing price and then trying to do the math to figure out, okay, does it make sense or not? When really you should be looking at how much can it make net? Because then you could back into a purchase price that actually makes sense as a business investment. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that goes back to understanding, do you understand the market first and then the property? Because a lot of people do it backwards, where they're like, oh, I heard of this market, therefore let me see properties in the market and the prices of them, and then let me see if the revenue makes sense. But you have no idea what actually drives revenue in that particular marketplace. So I'm looking for first, if I like a market, I'm going to study that market out and research it out, just like you said, to figure out net income, but also why are those properties cash flowing 50K or 100K or whatever it is? And can I replicate that? You know, are they all just like igloos or something stupid that I don't want to do? Or there is something like some formula or hack or like you said, buy box for that particular market. And then I go into evaluating actual properties and prices. And to add on to what you said too, I think people don't realize, a lot of people don't realize, but you can negotiate. You know, it's a real estate transaction. You can ask for concessions or credits, you know, and really like pull things out to help make the deal better. And so a lot of people are doing that either. And I think that that's causing some problems. It's just like, oh, it doesn't work. Therefore, you know, it's not a good deal. And there's some things you can do to play with it. One other thought that came to mind, though, which is interesting. I don't know if you do this, Ryan, but I've started to, so in my pro forma, which we are, I guess our pro forma, we built it together. Remember that? So we've got three scenarios, right? And we have, so it's like a good, better, best. And I've been running actually scenario one. I like to see what the break even is. So I'll figure out my expenses and my debt service. And then I'll actually go to revenue and I'll figure out what amount of revenue do I need to generate gross where I know it will break even. And then I'll look at the delta between the break even and what I actually think the property can do. And then like in a, you know, better case scenario and then the best case. And if it's really, really close together, that's risky to me. You know what I mean? Mm. Like if there's a wide gap, so like, for example, I'm looking at one deal. I ran the pro forma and I'm like, look, I feel good that this property can do $250,000. But what if I'm wrong? I could be wrong. You know, there's a chance I could be wrong. So I go, okay, well, what's my break-even point? My break-even point for gross revenue is $124,000. That's like 2x what I think, it's like half of what I think it's going to do. So if I miss, I'd have to miss by 100, essentially like 100% to not even like just to break even, which that seems like low risk to me, you know, and gets me excited. It's like, wow, like I could screw this up in a sense, but still I'm definitely going to break even and still make some money from it. I feel that confident in it, you know, and maybe it does 250, maybe it does 300. I've got both of those scenarios planned out, but $124,000, that's very doable for the property. And that's what I'm looking for.
You're trying to orchestrate a scenario in which if you're wrong, you're still right. And if you're right, you're even more right.
Yeah, because
right?
I'm very risk averse. Mm-hmm. I think that's what risk averse people do.
Data people by nature, right? So it's like you want to try to do your best, and this goes for everybody, like to orchestrate a situation in which if you are wrong about your assumptions that you're not going to go bankrupt and you're still right, like it's an okay deal. But if you were right, like if you're super right, then it's an even greater deal, you know, you brought this point up earlier about real estate, you being able to negotiate. Can't do that in the stock market. There's no negotiating Apple stock in the stock market. The price is what the price is. And so that's where I think that real estate does offer that advantage to, you know, if you know a market, if you know somebody there, there are sweetheart deals that are going to be made. I want to create an environment where like I have smaller chances of losing as much as possible. I don't want to lose, right? It'd be like, you know, you ever played Texas Hold'em, Kenny?
Oh, yeah.
You played the one time we were there in Gulf Shores, right?
Yes, I think so. We played a couple times, but yeah.
If you wanted to get better at, like, let's say you wanted to get better at playing cards, like you wanted to make more money playing cards, how would you get better?
Number one, I would probably watch people who are really good at it.
You'd watch other people, you'd practice, right?
Sure, yeah.
What if you could find a table where people don't know how to play?
But, oh, like to actually like execute my skills on?
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, that's like, there it is. Right.
A lot of people, if they had to play poker and win money, they would try to get better at their actual skill of playing poker. When instead you could just go find an area or go find a table with people that don't know how to play. Harder done, but your chances of winning are going to be a lot more. And so I sort of take that analogy and I put it into whatever it is that I do. It's like, where can I, to your point about those markets, it's like, where can I find a market or, you know, this pool of people where they just don't know what the hell they're doing, but there's still a good chance or opportunity for revenue, right? So how can you architect or orchestrate a scenario in which you lose, you still win. And if you win, you've come out even further ahead, right?
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of it comes down to done that in, for example, Watkins Glen property, I think is kind of like my flagship one, where I bought that thing for $350,000 and it's grossing over 100K. And here's the thing, my nearest competitor to me is grossing $60,000. Mm. So I didn't underwrite the deal at 100K. I underwrote the deal at 60K. So I knew going in, I looked at the property, I looked at my competitors, I said, they're not doing dynamic pricing. They don't have a hot tub. They don't have all these other things. But I'm not simply making the investment purely because of that. I'm making it because what they're currently generating makes pencils out in its current state.
Right.
You know? So like, even if I made only 60K and nothing more than that, I'm fine. I'm still going to net something. And it's still going to be a decent investment. But I took the plunge and I'm doing 100, and I'll probably do 105 or 110 next year on that thing. Mm-hmm. So anyway.
Yeah. And it reminds me of, like, you know, when they train police officers to shoot people, they always say aim center mass, you know, like aim, because that's the best point that you have the chance of hitting something. Like you don't want to, you know, a headshot would be risky, you know, with a headshot. Kill somebody if you needed to kill somebody, yes. But is it also risky of missing? Yeah. You're just trying to knock the guy down, right?
Right.
So just aim for center critical mass, you know? What was, I had another story or example I had. It'll come back to me.
Sure.
Here's the thing too, like what I'm seeing lately, and I'll tie all this back into my story about meeting this, you know, decamillionaire guy at the mastermind in just a second.
Okay.
What I'm seeing a lot of people miss out though lately is they're not setting themselves up for success on the next deal.
Mm.
Like people are, you know, first or second property, they're doing 10%, 15% down loans. They're maxing their debt to income. And then they have to wait for, you know, a year's filed tax return showing their rental income or their W-2, like getting a raise at their W-2. And so some people, it's going to take them 2 to 3 years before they can acquire another property because they're not thinking ahead of, it's not just about the deal that I'm doing, but what about how am I going to buy the next deal? Like, where do I leave myself after?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. I think that's a really good point. I will throw a little bit of cautionary wind to that because I've seen too many people get caught up in this, like, what am I going to do? Not just like the next one, but the one after that and the one after that and the one after that.
That
and
they do
don't even have a property.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, let's get this one right first and know what you're doing. Get your feet wet. be successful, and then let's talk about like all, you know, all these big plans, you know? Because one thing I've learned too, like your property that you buy today, the next one's not going to be the same price. It shouldn't cash flow the same amount. It should cash flow more technically. And the one after that, it's like, it should be stepping stone or like steps or whatever. And I don't feel like even myself in my investment history, like we don't fully comprehend what is possible after we do something. And so don't get my advice to people. I think you're absolutely right though. Think don't like paint yourself in a corner on property number one or two, but don't necessarily be like trying to plan out your entire future today because you have no freaking idea, you know?
It goes back to what I said earlier. You don't want to be too overly safe and you don't want to be too overly risky. You know,
sure.
But the right amount of being safe and the right amount of risk at the right time is what leads people to being successful. It's like bears in the porridge, right? You don't want it to be too cold and it ain't too hot. It's got to be just right.
Right.
You know, like it's too many people jump in head first to your point earlier. Not knowing what they don't know. And I think that's one of the biggest fears of all.
Mm.
It's not about what you don't know, because you know what you don't know. People right. say, oh, I know I don't know X, Y, Z about this topic. That's okay, because you know what you don't know. But what about you don't know what you don't know? That's the biggest fear. That's the that's not even the blind spot, right? That's right. Like the car freaking came across from the other lane. You had no idea it was coming. Spot like
right.
You don't sometimes you don't know what you don't know. At least on my end, we see a lot of clients where they'll come to us with a question about transferring a property, let's say, or their parents are about to pass away or whatever. Like they think it's a tax question, but in reality it's a legal question, it's a lending question, it's more like a financial planning retirement question. And we're, you know, just because of my background and the training that we do, like I'm really able to get people connected to the right spots of what they need. Like, hey, you're asking me this question. It's not really a tax question. It's actually a title transfer question. You got to go talk to this guy over here. Or the biggest fear is like not knowing what you don't know, 100% by far.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I mean, the best way to get around that is number one, hiring people to help you, you know, getting that expertise and that advice. But also too, not over leveraging yourself. It's just becoming more and more common. I think once again, I harp on this where people are watching that YouTube video or hearing that podcast from 2020, 2021, maybe even 2022. And they're like, I can do exactly what that person did and have the same success. But the market has shifted. If the market shifted, we have to shift how we think and do things. The smartest people I talk to are the people that come to me and go, I've got a successful short-term rental portfolio and I'm doing great and I'm looking for my next property. I'm like, great. Well, what's the problem then? If you've got a good portfolio, you know how to find deals. Why are you coming to me to help you find deals? And they're like, Kenny, the market has changed. And I'm like, you're right. It has. Thank you for recognizing that. And they're like, I've recognized it takes more time and energy and effort to find something today. And I have to completely relearn how to do the process. It's not the same. It's not go to SDR Insights or AirDNA, pull the 75th percentile, and that's going to be your safety net. The 90th percentile is what you're shooting for. That's not how we do it. That will lead you astray and you will mess up. And so if the methods have changed, then your approach should change as well. So in my opinion, those people who are coming and looking for that guidance or just like not even coming, you don't have to come to me, but like just approaching it differently because they know the market shifted. Those people are the ones who are really wanting to avoid those painful situations of finding something out they didn't know about.
Well, it's just like, I don't know how much you guys study finance, but in all the times when they show the stock market performances, there's always this little blurb at the bottom where it goes, past performance is not indicative of future results.
Yeah.
You know, it's in every single stockbroker, brick and magazine or whatever, like, because it's true. Just because something worked in the past for you, even you, or somebody else, you might be like, man, Jim Bob down the street, he bought that freaking house for 100 grand. He didn't know what the hell he's doing. He's just messing around. That thing went up to 200 grand. Like, if he could do it, I could do it. It's like, well, yeah, Jim Bob also could have just got freaking lucky. You know, yeah. You don't know. And so, yeah, past performance, not always indicative of future results. But I'll tell you, like, this is, man, I had a great conversation with this guy. Just more background on him. He's got one of the largest communities of stock traders. So they got, I'll tell you the number offline, how much money he's making. They got the largest community of like people that just want to, they got an extra couple hundred grand and they want to learn how to trade, you know, stock trading. You might be like, well, how is stock trading correlative to real estate? It has everything to do with real estate, because a lot of times people use real estate as a diversification away from the stock market. So a lot of our clients, Kenny, we probably agree, is like share the mutual interest of, it's like, man, they got a $2 million net worth, but it's all tied up in their 401k or their primary house. You know, they don't have a lot of liquid assets. And one of the things that I learned from him is, you know, the risk or fear of being right. And this is also what we're going to most likely title the podcast after. He tells me the story. He's like, I had a friend of mine. At the time, he only had $30,000 in his whole life savings. That's it. And he calls me and he's like, I want to go buy, I want to do swing trading. I want to do these stocks. And he goes, I think that's a really bad idea because you only have $30,000 of your net worth to your name. Probably a bad idea to go trade it on stocks on something you have nothing, you have no idea about. And of course, he's like, oh, well, you know, I watch whatever bullshit finance, you know, news channel every single day, and right, I read all these things, right? Well, the guy calls him back 8 months later. He said he turned $30,000 into $80,000. And that he goes, you know what I told my friend? I told my friend he's, you know what? He's screwed. I go, what? Like, what do you mean? Like, I understand, but I'm like, exactly why? He goes, well, my friend took a super speculative risk on an asset class that he had no idea about, and the market rewarded him for that. That's the biggest risk that anybody can take, because now that person's going to have a false sense of confidence that anything that they touch turns into gold, and now they can go repeat it again. And in fact, that guy ended up losing everything, by the way, my buddy told me. And so I correlated that to real estate of like, man, how many investors or how many people bought real estate in 2020 to 2022, 2023, thinking that like, man, I'm the man, like I did it, super successful. Everything that I touch turns into gold. That's a risk in itself of like doing something the first time, getting it absolutely right, and then thinking you can repeat it. Because the market, whether we're talking about the stock market or we're talking about real estate, it doesn't reward irrational behavior, you know? On a short time horizon, if you're buying and selling stuff too much, whether it's stocks or real estate, the market doesn't reward irrational behavior like that. The market rewards people who hold on to shit for a long time and don't get rid of it.
Yeah.
That's really what the market rewards at face value. I don't know if you had anything to add to that.
Yeah, I definitely do. I'll give you an example. I bought during the, like right before COVID or during COVID, like right when it got really, really bad. In 2020 and everything was like shut down. I bought like some Bitcoin, some cryptocurrency. And I mean, it was like $3,000 a coin. I was like, yeah, let's do it. It was kind of like money that I could like, you know, I guess throw away. I had savings and everything. I didn't put my life savings into it. I wasn't like, oh, it's going to go to the moon or anything like that. And you know what? I got rewarded pretty handsomely for that. Okay. Like right out the gate, it did really, really well. And I was thinking to myself, I was like, well, shoot, I can do that. And there's all these like really crappy coins that people are making up. And I'm like, I can just go and invest in that. And to be frank, I lost a lot of money doing that. So like, even for myself, you know, that feeling of like, oh, well, I figured it out once, I can go and like replicate it without doing any sort of research or understanding of what these different coins are, what they mean, who created them, what the point of them is, frankly.
Yeah.
I didn't do any of that because I had this like, you know, overconfidence that I could just replicate it again because I got it right the first time. And that's not how investing works. You know what I mean? Like people have freaking degrees in finance and investing. And I was talking to a stockbroker at one point, and you know, who runs like a $1 billion fund and all this. And when I was at Citibank, and he was telling me how aggressive they get and how much they fight for like a seventh percent of a return on like a daily basis. They're like going for these things. And I'm like, what? Like a seventh of a percent for a return? I'm like, that's nothing. And he's like, yeah, but like when you look at the grand scheme, when you look at the long-term play on a daily basis, that's actually huge, you know? And it's the approach that they're taking. And he's like, yeah, like people are like literally like going to get in fist fights over like trying to buy like whatever, you know, like some stock or a company or whatever. And it's like, but when you think about it that way, if that's what the professionals are doing, you know, we need to, you know, you've heard the term model the masters, right?
Yeah.
Or something, whatever it is, mimic the model the masters. But if they're doing that, they're approaching it that way, we probably need to be thinking in that sense too, you know? And I think in short-term rentals, bringing it into short-term rentals is more relevant. That includes how we approach investing in our own properties, the things we add to our property, the small touches, the presentation, little tiny things. It adds up and it creates the real returns that we're going for. And if you just think that I can just take what I did before and replicate it over and over and over and keep doing it forever, that's not based in any logic or numbers. That's just based in, you know, a one-time experience. That's risky.
Well, to your point too, you said earlier, it's like the market changes over time. Mm-hmm. Even if you bought three properties in the same area 3 years in a row, one each year, that fourth year, the market's changed. You know, you're going to get that property probably assuming at a higher purchase price.
Right.
Which there's some argument to be made. And we talked a little bit about this, I think, at one of the masterminds of just like the whole market manipulation thing, right? If you already own four of them in one area, you know, you don't really care to pay that high for a fifth one because that sets the comp for your other four properties, right?
Yeah.
That's why we love real estate, because there's gamesmanship to that. But to your point, like, everything's changed. You might not think anything's changed. Everything's changed. Even if you just bought a property there a year ago, everything's changed. The market is changing constantly. But you know what? One thing I learned from this guy too is like, even though it's constantly changing, it doesn't reward irrational behavior. It doesn't reward these people that are like, oh my God, everything's changed. I need to throw away my game script or my game plan. Or not investing at all is risky. Investing too much is risky. Moderation in all things, right? You want to have the right amount of safety net and then the right amount of risk. Like a lot of people right now are waiting until the election. What the hell, what does it mean? 90% of the people you guys are worrying about the election right now. 90% of you, you're going to do the same exact shit the day after. It's not going to change a damn thing. You're just using it as an excuse to validate to not do something.
Yep.
Right? Because history and stats do show, doesn't matter if it's a Democrat or a Republican president, the stock market is not like, it's indecisive most times. Most markets are like that. Now, can the president, you know, help? Again, the president doesn't write the tax code. It's Congress that writes the tax code, right? President signs it into law. But like, can we get a president that brings back bonus depreciation, lowers corporate and personal income tax rates? I freaking hope so.
Yeah,
I really hope so for me. But at the end of the day, it ain't going to change a damn thing, because people are looking like they want to have a reason for them not to succeed, and they'll just pin it on whatever's going on. You know, I can't succeed because Kamala Harris is going to be president. Oh, I can't succeed because we're going to have four more years of Trump. It's just all these things that you're telling yourself that are going to make you not succeed, because you just want a reason to validate why you're not going to be successful. Sorry.
Yeah. And also, make the excuse to not learn and adjust with the market. Yeah, I mean, if you agree that the market's changed, that means you have to you almost have to relearn how you do things or adapt, right? He who adapts survives. So if that's the case, then, you know, I see a lot of these people like, you know, oh, Airbnb is dead. Well, did you really think logically, like, it made sense to just, everybody could just buy Airbnbs whenever they wanted, or short-term rentals, and make all this money, and that's just how it was going to be forever? No, that's not that's not sustaining. That's not going to last. Like, it's a maturing industry, and you're going to see it become more professionalized. That's where we're headed today. So if that's the case, then the approach should be like, this is a professional business, and if I don't like hospitality, I shouldn't be in it. So, yeah,
or you gotta watch out for that. Someone that does, yeah,
Yeah. It's not like I say, like, watch out for the fads, because they're, if you treat it like a get rich quick, it's a fad for you. Doesn't mean it's a fad for everybody else who's treating it seriously, but it's a fad. And we know fads don't last, right? That's why they're called fads. So it's one of those things where it's like, you need to be careful. I mean, there's other types of fads in the, let's get controversial here. There's other types of fads in the real estate industry, you know, like sub 2 and a lot of like types of creative financing where you're taking advantage of people's, like, they got a low interest rate on a property they overpaid for, and doing that, like, that's not going to last forever. It can't, right? Because as markets shift, as interest rates are going back down, it doesn't make sense to even do that to begin with. Not to mention those properties don't cash flow anyway, but whatever. So it's a fad. So, but it's a strategy that will be applied and can work again in the future at some point. But today, it just doesn't. So, or won't.
You know what sub two reminds me of? Actually, now that I think about it, for people that don't know, we're talking about how, like, you can basically take over somebody's mortgage on a underperforming. Most of the time, they're buying somebody's primary residence, though, right? Or are they buying rentals too?
Oh, they're buying rentals too.
Okay. Yeah. So after World War II, a lot of our fighter pilots got shot down, right? And they were trying to figure out, like, what of the plane was bad to make them always get shot down so easily. They were only looking at the planes that actually came back to America, that successfully flew back. And they looked at the planes and where they were all shot. They were looking at the ones that got shot and came back as a, like, oh, okay, here's where we should, you know,
reinforce.
We should armor. But they weren't looking at the planes that actually got shot down, that fell down on the ground. So it's just like this, they call it survivorship bias. Like, you should have that going in if you're going to be doing sub two, because it's like, hey, there's a reason why this person can't pay their freaking mortgage on their property. It's probably because it's a shitty property. Duh. Yeah. Or the, like... Like, anybody who's ever selling a property, there's a reason, right? You know, we always talk about the four D's, right? Like, death, divorce, distress, or something else. I can't remember. But that's what I'm saying. Like, these sub two deals, it's like, hey, man, there's a reason why this person's selling the property, you know?
Yep.
You always got to go down. Like, the seller is always going to have a reason why. And if they tell you anything else, it's complete bullshit. They're always going to have a reason why they want to sell.
Well, and I'm sick and tired of these people who are, like, promoting these sub two deals, like agents, more importantly, who are promoting them, who are like, oh, well, it's a low down payment, or, oh, it's a killer interest rate. And you're like, yeah, but that doesn't mean, like, it's still a pig. You know what I mean? It's still, like, it's not something like, or a bear, it's probably a better term, but, like, it's still not something that, like, it makes it a good deal all of a sudden. It doesn't cash flow. It doesn't matter what interest rate it is. I was at B&B camp, and I don't want to pick on anybody speaker wise, but there was a speaker there who was talking about sub two, and he pulled up this deal in Montana. He's like, somebody needs to buy this now. And I had like three clients in the audience, and they all like freaked out about it because they're looking for properties, and they all like checked it out. And it doesn't matter what interest rate the seller was willing to give them. Down to 3%, and also no money down, it still didn't cash flow with current expenses and everything else that's involved, like insurance and taxes and utilities and all that. It didn't even cash flow. You'd have to turn it into another type of business beyond short-term rentals for it to make sense to cash flow, because it didn't cash flow as a short-term rental. And sure, somebody else could do that, and then it would make sense. But the people were looking at a short-term rental. And I was like, you can't get hyped up about, oh, it's got a low interest rate, or, oh, it's got a low down payment, or things. You got to look at the whole picture before you make that decision. People are too caught up in getting doors and not quality of doors.
Mm.
That comes from long-term rental thinking. When you think about it, because that's how they make money in long-term rentals, is you have to have a lot of doors to be successful, right? So with short-term rentals, we don't want a lot of doors. We want as few doors possible that are cash flowing and appreciating. And obviously the tax savings, all that great stuff. But that, like, I'd rather have 5 doors that make the same amount as 100 doors.
This reminds me of my infamous less is more speech in San Diego. That's what I discovered. It's like, after working with over 500 people, I noticed the trend was people still to this day think that in order to scale or grow their net worth, that means that they need to add complexity to their life. Like, I need to go buy more properties or buy more doors. We just did an analysis with somebody. Actually, I think they're one of your clients too, Kenny, where like they were able to sell a property, take all their gains from that property, and they were under the assumption that they had to 1031 the property if they wanted to save money on taxes. Well, I looked at their scenario and turns out they didn't do cost segregation on the other two or three properties that they owned. So they were actually able to, instead of having a 1031 that the proceeds from that sale, they were able to use the other properties to offset the gain. And then they took that money and instead of like buying a property right now, which was out of their wheelhouse of what they wanted to do, they just paid down a freaking 9% HELOC and a 9% loan that they had, you know, guaranteed return of 9 to 10% by paying off that loan. But they were able to grow their net worth. They were able to increase their yearly cash flow by $60,000 just by selling a house and paying down another one.
Wow.
60 grand.
Wow.
Because the first property wasn't cash flowing to begin with, or actually it was losing money. It was probably losing like 10, 12 grand a year. And then the proceeds that they got from the property from the sale, which again, they didn't pay any taxes on, they were able to use it to pay down a 9% interest loan. And those two there created them over $50,000 of cash flow that they had now. A lot of people think in order to scale, you got to grow, you got to buy more stuff. When in reality, sometimes less is more. When Michelangelo, when he was looking at that slab of marble, he didn't say, what can I add to the slab? He said, I'm going to start chiseling this thing. And that's what became the Statue of David. So a lot of you are thinking, oh, I need to go buy more property. In reality, you need to look at your properties, get rid of the shitty ones, and then dump all your money into probably the properties that are good, or just focus on buying better properties. And you're laughing now because now you got the joke.
I just have that. Can I show the story? Is that okay?
Yeah, that's what.
So, all right. So here we are. Less is more. I love it. So Ryan is giving this presentation in San Diego, and he's doing a PowerPoint. And he was talking about, you know, with the statue. What statue was it again?
Statue of David.
The Statue of David. Okay, yeah, Statue of David. And because he just went to the museum, and it was in Chicago or New York or something like that.
Yeah. That was the one in the France.
Oh, in France. Right, okay, anyway, gotcha. Yeah. And anyway, he's got like these two shots. And like the biggest one is the statue. If you haven't seen the Statue of David, go Google it. But it's a full body shot. He's completely nude, naked. And it's like, you just see his like groin shot, like it's in the middle, and it's like next to it, like less is more. And Brian's like, I'm completely oblivious to it. And everybody in the back's like, wait a second, what's this? So we just see less is more.
I swear I had no idea. Yeah. Until I think it was Kim Fitzpatrick that brought
it. Yeah, because she was just cracking up. She was like taking pictures of it. And, yeah, we were just like, yeah, for the little guy.
Less is more sometimes, people.
Oh, goodness. Anyway, I hope that makes it.
Aside from the male body part jokes, but like going back to the whole wrist thing, another analogy that somebody uses is like, man, imagine boxing. Like, let's say you start hitting the heavy bag and you're like, man, I'm really good at this. Like, I probably could get in the ring with somebody. And then you go into the ring with somebody and that person sucks. And you, let's say you beat the crap out of them. Then you're like, man, I'm really good at this. And then your next fight is like Mike Tyson or something.
Yeah.
but that's what happens. People don't know, but that's what happens in investing. Whether you're in the stock market or real estate, it's like you were successful at this property. But what you didn't know is you just bought it at a super low interest rate and it happens to make money. But that same thing isn't going to work. So now when you try to replicate that today, or you try to get in the ring with Tyson, it ain't going to work. You know, because to your point, Kenny, the market changes, you know, the market shifts.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you this, and I'll mm-hmm. give my opinion in a second, but I want to hear yours first and then we'll come back to me. But what do? If you're listening to this and you're like, hey, that makes a lot of sense. Okay. Obviously, like, I don't think I could take down Mike Tyson, but maybe I could beat up some people, but I know I can't take down Mike Tyson. Like, what do you do at that point? Do you just give up, or do you like, what's your approach?
I mean, you take the right amount of risk at the right time. So one of the things that we like to do is, let's say you've bought a couple of properties, 3 or 4 properties. You also have money in retirement accounts and you got cars and stuff. We have you put that out on your net worth statement. And then it's like, okay, look, you got 13% of your equities in this property and 15% of equities in that property. And then it's like, okay, well, when we are going to go make that next investment or that next risk, right? Because we're all assuming risk, whether we like it or not. Investing, not investing at all is actually risky because of opportunity cost. So you don't want to not invest at all, but you also don't want to just go in there and invest too much because that would be risky too, right? Moderation in all things. Don't want to be overly safe. Don't want to be overly risky. But we could look at somebody's portfolio and say, hey, the right amount of risk for you at this point in time is to take 10 to 15% of your net worth and put it into the next property.
Yeah.
That's how I at least overcome the, because again, an accountant, we're risk adverse by nature, right?
Right.
But in order to get, if we were always risk adverse by nature and we were always trying to be safe, like there'd be no innovation and nobody would make money, you know, because nothing would be ever invented that allowed you to make more money, like Airbnbs, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm one of the first guy that probably put his property on Airbnb is like just sitting there waiting for somebody to like book it, you know.
That's the good old days. Yeah.
Now here's another thing, a little spin on it. Sometimes the market can give you that false sense of confidence that, that we're talking about of like, you think that you're in control, you know, you, like even with me, you know, I have a portfolio of like index funds and stocks. It's like the market wants me to think that I'm in control when in reality, you know, like in the old like battle days, they used to ride elephants in the battle. Mm-hmm. So there'd be a guy up on the chariot with the elephant. It's like, and he's got the reins on the thing, but reality is like if that elephant wanted to go berserk, that elephant could do whatever the hell the elephant wants to do. The human on top of the elephant is just like, he's just going to be sitting up there.
Right.
Even a horse, like, but it gives you this false sense of confidence that like the person on top of the elephant, you're in control. When in reality, if that elephant wanted to go berserk, it can. That's the market.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's,
market,
you know,
market going to do what it wants to do.
I think we started hearing more like black swan events when COVID came around, right? It's like events that happened that aren't, you know, that weren't predicted. If you look at Asheville, North Carolina, got hit by a hurricane, you know, like Asheville is like touted as this like, you know, very safe, very low insurance costs. Like nobody has flood insurance there. And they had this huge storm that came and, you know, wiped out some parts of it. It'll be back. So don't worry about it. But at the end of the day, like that's a black swan event they weren't expecting, you know? And for me, it's, you're never going to predict those. You can't predict those, but you have, in my opinion, you need to make sure you're well diversified.
Mm.
I can't, I don't know. We can have a debate on this or not, but with short-term rentals, it is extremely attractive to have economies to scale, but it's actually very risky to have economies to scale. Meaning like buy a bunch of properties in the same market. And because you have a good team of cleaners, handyman, and so on, the reality is it's actually more risky to do that, especially with all the natural disasters and things that are going on in the economy and the markets and whatever. It takes one forest fire in the Smokies to wipe out your entire, which happened. There's property management. I was talking to this lady I met last week, and she runs a property management company with like 150 doors or whatever in the Smokies. And I was talking to her about that. And I said, are you looking at diversifying? Like, you know, and she's like, yeah, we're going to be moving to Branson and Blue Ridge and all these other areas. And she said that the reason why is because when they had that fire, it was like 2 years ago, there were some property management companies where they just ran certain neighborhoods and that's it. They wouldn't take anybody else on. They only ran those neighborhoods and the neighborhoods got wiped out and those companies are gone because that was their entire portfolio, you know, at just managing. And so, you know, can't imagine owners. And if you don't have that diversification, you can really, really, really get hit hard. And so in my mind, it's like, well, what can I do? Stay humble, number one, you know, make sure you have savings and stuff. I like the 10 to 15%. That's a lot better than what I'm about to say. But, you know, from a number standpoint, but more importantly, like, so stay humble, understand that you only know what you know. So always be learning, always be studying, always be following people who know what they're talking about or think they do, maybe. Then finally, like when diversify, think about, don't just throw all your eggs into one basket, even with short-term rentals. I don't talk about this a lot, but I own long-term rentals. I apparently own cryptocurrency. I admitted to that earlier. I also own stocks, you know, and do all this other stuff. It's not just a short-term rental portfolio. And it's because I understand this element of like, I need to diversify and I need to diversify my current portfolio. I've got New York properties. I'm heavily loaded here. I'm not buying here anymore. I'm buying the next one. We just closed on it today. Thank you everybody for congratulating me, but I'm just kidding. So we got one in Kentucky and closed on it today, but it's like a completely different market, far away. It's not impacted by the same sort of areas and politics and whatever. And so, but that's the mindset I think that people need to have.
Well, the other thing that we didn't bring up, but we were alluding to it, is like legislation risk also.
Oh, yeah.
Like obviously if you're in the Smokies or like Destin, it probably won't happen to you, but you know, if you got four or five houses in Michigan somewhere and all of a sudden they decide to ban them.
Mine just got shut down in Buffalo.
That's a risk.
I am the perfect example of this. I had a large portfolio in Buffalo of short-term rentals. Every single one of them got shut down. And here's why. Here's the rule they made. If you have a non-owner occupied property in Buffalo, you have to live in the county. I live literally 5 minutes outside the county. I'm 20 minutes from those properties, but I live 5 minutes outside that county in the county that's just to the north of it, just how the borders are, in the suburbs. And I, therefore, legally, I cannot get a permit. I can try to appeal and do all this stuff, but they're putting a memorandum on new permits because so many people are applying and trying. They just pass this rule without any, it's stupid, but they essentially shut down all my short-term rentals. But thankfully, many years ago, I saw the politics of the state and how the city was acting, and I knew I needed to get out and be in other places. And so I've shut down properties. I turn them back into midterm rentals or long-term rentals. So even though this sucks, as kind of a shock, it was a little bit earlier than I was hoping, I'm not like all in. I didn't have 30 units or 40 units like a lot of people did in Buffalo. I've diversified to other areas and hedged that risk there. And it's just simply understanding the sentiment in the community and going like, look, I don't really think they love short-term rentals, even though they understand the benefits of it. And it's just risky in an urban market. Therefore, I need to diversify more to protect that just in case something happens, which it inevitably did.
Yeah. And we could go so many ways, and maybe we need to make the next podcast episode about the like percentages and returns of one way or the other. But, you know, you mentioned like having, let's just say you had five properties and all five are in the same area. So that gets you more economies of scale, you know, mm-hmm. probably cheaper operating costs, things like that. Versus if you had them all five spread across, you know, let's say you had one in Smokies, Destin, New York, Kentucky, and then Ohio, whatever. Just not, what was the town name in Ohio?
Logan. I just pick on it, but yeah.
But even within that, you can go further down the diversification chain of saying, okay, I got $500,000 of equity. Do I want that tied up in one $2 million house, or would I rather have five $400,000 houses? It's mm-hmm. it's the same equity no matter how you shake it out. It's the same appreciation no matter how you shake it out, numbers wise, right? Do you want four or five houses, or do you just want one? That's something to think about. Depends on the person.
It does. And it depends on how valuable their time is too, right?
That's
you
right.
want to manage, because the reality is you will spend less time managing that one big property than you would all four of the smaller ones, right? You'll theoretically spend the same amount of time. I do this. I tell people all the time, I have a one bedroom and I have a seven bedroom. I actually spend more time on the one bedroom than the seven bedroom property. Like,
yeah, because it also could be the quality of guests too. Like,
correct, quality know. Of guests, number so of
people,
guests. I have a lot more turnovers with the one bedroom than I do the seven bedroom. You know, the one bedroom cash flow is 10 grand a year. It's an incredible deal. It was great. It was an amazing deal. The seven bedroom cash flow is 50K a year. I'd rather take the 50K over the 10K any day of the week. I think everybody else.
I think we got our next podcast idea episode.
There you go.
You know, that's one of the things that got me into real estate early on in the first place too, is just understanding how you can really use leverage and all the benefits that are in real estate outside of just cash.
Right.
That you don't get in the stock market. You know, mm-hmm. you get you put 50 grand in the stock market in Apple stock, it goes up 5%. Now you have $52,000, right?
But it's taxable and you can't pull it out.
That's right. But you put 50 grand, you put 50 grand down on a $200,000 house, and that goes up, that goes up 5%. Well, now your net worth just went up $10,000 instead of $2,500. Mm-hmm. You're getting the tax benefits, you're getting the loan paid on, and you're getting the cash flow. So it's like, well, we're not here to tell you all your money and only in all your money should be invested in real estate. We're here telling you that, diversification is a good thing. Like, even within your real estate portfolios, but then also 401k stocks, things like that, that are outside of just real estate.
I love it. I love it. Cool.
That'll be in the next episode, I guess.
The next one, if people want to hear us again.
Well, thanks for listening, everyone. You can find me on Instagram at LearnLikeACPA. I also got the largest Facebook group for tax smart investors at Tax Strategies for Real Estate Investors is the Facebook group name. You can find Kenny at, what's your at, Kenny?
You can find me at Kenny_Bedwell. I got really creative with it. And obviously you can check me out at strinsights.com. Yeah, those are the two best places if you want to get in touch.
So. Awesome. So strinsights.com for Kenny. Check me out, Tax Strategies for Real Estate Investors Facebook group. And we'll see you guys in the next episode.
And before you go, your website is taxstrategy365.com.
Right? Yeah.
Yep. Go check that out, guys. So I will say this. For my listeners, I guess, I use Ryan's services. So I will definitely vouch for him as a CPA because he is my CPA. So definitely.
This is not a paid promotion.
Yeah, this is not a paid promotion. Yeah, we should say that. But I just like to say that because I think a lot of people want to know. They want to know who you're using, why you're using them. And, I think it's one of the biggest things I think Ryan saved, once again, not a paid promotion, but I want to give credit where credit's due is, I've had three different CPAs in the last 3 years. Maybe it's me, not them, but I think it's them. And, I was using we don't need to get into super details here, but they had me under a Schedule C the whole time, every single one of the CPAs. And so I came to Ryan's team, they explained to me why I shouldn't be Schedule C, why it needs to be Schedule E, and how that could improve my, my tax savings and strategy and all that. And so these guys know what they're doing. So definitely check them out if you're in the market for a CPA or tax strategy or whatever you need. So go to that taxstrategy365.com.
Awesome. Thanks.
Heard it here first.
Yeah. I mean, on the other side too, like, I've had you on my Tax Strategy 365 community a few times now, and I still have clients to this day that reference the call that we did.
Oh, cool.
It was a couple months ago now, but like every single day somebody's they're referencing that call because what we're teaching, we want to give you guys a parachute, but we also want to give you guys a backup parachute too. So we want to tell you like, here's everything that we've learned and already predicting like the roadblocks that you guys are going to come across. And Kenny's the best at doing that.
Thanks, man. Cool. All right. Well, I hope everybody enjoyed the episode. We'll see you on the next
one. Awesome, guys. See you soon.